Some days I just sleep for 2 or 3 days, 3 or 4 days. I forget what day it is. I could walk out of a store and forget where I'm at. That's how alcohol and drugs have damaged me.
All right, Richard.
Yes.
Richard, where'd you grow up? Where are you from originally?
I'm from Atlanta, Georgia.
Tell me about your family growing up.
Well, I come out of South Georgia, in a town called Americus, Georgia, which is south of Atlanta, sticks. My sister and I grew up with my grandfather and my grandmother.
Where was mom and dad?
I'm sorry?
Where were your parents?
My mother dropped us off at a friend of hers' house, and then her friend took us to my grandparents. And I didn't see my mother until I was 9 years old. I didn't meet her until I was 9 years old. She was one of those women that, she was a beautiful woman, but she loved the streets. And I think that's where I got myself from her. You know, because I remember the first time my mother went to jail. She was one of the first bootleggers in the neighborhood where, after I left Americus, Georgia, I went to Atlanta. After I ran away at 9, and she came and got us, my sister and I. And we was living in the oldest projects in the United States, which was Techwood Homes. Some of the most famous people's come out of Techwood. When I got there, probably was 1970 or 71. And it was a crazy place. And my mother, she was the neighborhood bootlegger. And I think I started drinking when I was in America because I used to steal my grandfather's whiskey. And by the time I got to Atlanta with my mother, I used to steal her beer.
What age did your drinking start?
Probably 6 years old. Mm. I was in the cotton field at the time. And at six in the cotton field in a town where you wasn't really welcome, you grew up fast. And I used to drink, I used to steal my grandfather's whiskey. And even before I went to school, we'd have to walk a couple of miles to catch the bus. School, and I would steal the whiskey the day before, and I would hide it in the woods, and I would then go back and get it on my way to school. And by the time I got to school, I was drunk as a kid, you know, or I didn't think I was a kid at the time, but I started drinking then. So when I got to Atlanta with my mother, it was all natural. It was something new. And I used to get up in the middle of the night and steal my mother's whiskey, vodka, or gin, or beer. And I remember one time she came, cleaned up my room, and there was like maybe 30 or 40 beer cans under the bed where I would drink it and throw it under the bed because I know she really never came in my room.
And this still is a young child.
Yes, very young. Everybody in my family, all except the siblings that came after me, my grandfather, he would get so drunk on a Sunday. He would drink one of those big jugs of wild turkey. And that was the worst time of my life. He would take all his anger out on me. I would get those drunk beatings. And after he got through beating me, I would go and steal some of his whiskey and drink it. That's the only way I can get rid of the pain. And it grew in me. Yeah. And I'm an artist. And, you know, through history, I've noticed that most artists end up drunks, drink a lot, you know, or drugs, which I was doing both. And, at 13 years old, I left home for good. At 13, I was I was a big person. I look older than I was. You know, people ask me, how old are you? I would say 17 or 18. And so most of the time they wouldn't even ask me. And then I would go in these nightclubs, these strip joints, and I would sit at the bar with grown men. And they didn't care. They didn't know how old I was.
How old were you actually?
14. I started going to my first bar. I think the year that I left home, which was 13, I was actually going into bars then, strip clubs, you know, and I would dress very nice. So it kind of threw the age off a little bit. You know, they wouldn't think a young guy like me would be dressed in suits and things like that. And I would sit at the bar and I would drink those Hurricanes. I mean, I'm sorry. I would drink the Hurricane, but my main one was, God, it'd come to me in a second, but I would drink two or three of those, bro. And at my age, I would be so drunk. I would literally go and find somewhere in the club or on the street somewhere and just pass out. And I was a young guy, you know, and what's so sad about that, my youngest brother, even to this day, he became very mentally disturbed by drinking. He started drinking probably younger than I was. I think he started drinking at like age 4. My mother used to drink. My grandfather used to drink. My sister used to drink. Both my sisters used to drink. My oldest brother, I think he was the only one that didn't drink. I think he fell on the other side of the tree. But there was times when I grew up, got older, I would fall asleep at the wheel, driving drunk, you know, and thank God I didn't kill anybody. I didn't hit anybody. I didn't have no accident, nothing like that. But I used to go in liquor stores and boost my liquor when I wasn't able to buy it. Sit on the curb and drink with everybody else.
That's a hell of a childhood.
I'm sorry?
That's a hell of a childhood.
I had a rough childhood. There was no men in my life. All women, my mother, my sisters.
Your dad wasn't around?
I'm sorry?
Your dad was not around?
I never knew my father. I knew he was Cuban, but I never met him. Hmm. You know, the only man that was around me at the time that thought anything of me was my oldest brother, Carl. He was the one that didn't drink. You know, and he always looked up for my well-beings. I would steal my mother's money just to go get alcohol if when she didn't have it. And I would go to Piedmont Park and I would sit behind the stage somewhere. They had an open stage there during the winter or at night when it was empty. I would leave home and just go and just sit on the stage, sit somewhere in the stage and drink. Or somewhere in Piedmont Park, anywhere. And I would fall asleep on the benches right there.
You finish high school?
No, I didn't. A lot of people don't know that because of the way I carried myself. I only went to the eighth grade, actually. Hmm. Eighth grade, and I walked away from school and never went back one day. But
has alcohol always been a thing for you?
Always. Alcohol and cocaine. You know, when I got into that street life, I was able to, because of the drug habit I had at the time, the cocaine habit, and I had a lot of it, so I was able to meet people that did that at the time. And, dude, there have been times where I would go in parties and I would be the drunkest one in the party sometimes. Because that was, even now sometimes I can't wake up unless I go to the store and get a beer. I always save $2 in my pocket so I can wake up next morning and go get a beer because the cheapest beer in the store is probably $1.85 or something like that. And that was, you know, and that got my day started. You know, I always kept whiskey sitting around, you know, even after I became known as an artist, it got even worse. Because I was isolated and that had nothing to do with painting. I'd paint and drink till I pass out. Sometimes I wake up on the floor right in front of the canvas, paintbrushes everywhere, paint all over the floor. You know, and.
What kind of drunk are you?
I call myself a sociable drinker. I'm not one of those drunks that get out in the public and cuss everybody out. I don't do that. That's a bad drunk right there.
It is.
I don't do that. I see people now that's out there that's on alcohol. And alcohol to me is worse than any drug. To me, alcohol would literally take you down, man. It would kill you. I watched it with my own eyes. My grandfather, he couldn't even pee. That's how bad he was, you know. And he was a stubborn man. He was a Native American, so he was stubborn. And he used to drink so much, he couldn't even pee. And that's bad. And he would drink, and he would beat my butt. He would beat my ass. He would just come here, little boy, and just grab and just whip my butt just like that. For no reason. If he tell me go do something, I look back, or somebody said I look back, he thought I was looking back at him, and I would get an ass whipping just for that. And like I said, to kill that pain, I go steal his alcohol. But nothing better than that Kentucky Wild, that Wild Kentucky whiskey. And my drug habit started probably around 11 to 12 years old. You know, and everybody knew my mother in my neighborhood. Everybody knew my mother, so she was a bootlegger. So everybody came to my mother's house, and came with them came the drugs. And at an early age, I knew the people that had the stuff they wanted. So I got involved in that, and then I started using it. I remember the first time I freebase. I was drunk that night. I was in Houston, Texas. I freebased, and I thought the world had ended. And after that, I sit there, and I think I drunk probably the Tanqueray, the green bottle. Jen, I think I might have drunk a big bottle of that stuff. And now that right there would take you down, and it took me down hard. You know, and when I was living in Houston, I had a bad breakup. And I was managing a R&B group there in Houston. And we had some different disagreements. And I remember leaving there, man, with a fifth in my hand. And I walked down the freeway. And I was hoping somebody just hit me. That's how awful I felt. That's how drunk I was. That's how stupid I was at the time. You know, and one of the things I can't stand is a stupid drunk. And I was looking at myself in the mirror at the time. You know, I'm in a suit walking down the freeway in Houston, Texas. This must have been 83, 84, something like that. Got me drinking, put me in prison in Houston. Got me 3 years for going in the store. And I had a business down the street from where I got locked up, which was Walgreens. And the lady said something, and I just went on one of those ramps, you know, on a nightclub, and I got all the liquor I want. And when I go in, they always have my drink sitting on my desk. And I would drink. And I remember walking out there one day and going to get something for the club. And I cussed the lady out at the cash register. And security in Houston at the stores there was just like the real police. And they held me to Harris County. Our sheriffs got there. And they put me in the dry tank. They called it the wino tank in Texas. So they put me in one of them tanks to dry. And the next morning, they took me to court, and I cussed the judge out. He gave me 3 years probation. And I told him, I said, well, fuck you and your probation. Threw me back in jail. 3 days later, they gave me 3 years, put me in prison. Went from Huntsville to Goree to Ramsey 3. But I only did like 3 months, 8 days. That was when the time in Texas was, they was, you know, you do like a month on a year or something like that. And in Atlanta, the same way. When I was in jail, in prison in Georgia, I knew a lot of people. And where you want me to bring Richard? Where you want me to bring Richard? I said, well, bring me some vodka, some Tanqueray or something. And I was staying in my cell and paint and drink. That's all I did in prison. You know, and got caught a few times making Pruno.
Have you ever tried to stop drinking?
Oh, of course. My early days, I didn't. Now, I drink a beer or two. You know, I'm not the way I was.
You're drinking less?
I drink a lot less. I may drink maybe two or three beers a week now. I still drink alcohol.
That's rare. Usually when people quit, they quit 100%.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to quit. And now I've slowed down almost to a complete halt because of I've been depressed lately. And depression, alcohol brings on depression. You know, once you start coming down, you start feeling sorry for yourself and all stupid shit like that. And I was in that position. I've been in that position. You know.
Are you using drugs?
Yes, I use drugs.
What do you use?
I use cocaine.
Yeah.
I use cocaine.
So that's kind of replaced the alcohol, maybe?
It slows the alcohol down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's only. But those only the cocaine's the only drug I ever used. I couldn't. I watched too many of my friends overdose on heroin and speed and a lot of other garbage that's out there. I mean, not recently, I'm talking about years back. I remember my best friend, he worked in this park in Atlanta called Washington Park. I was a young guy, and I kind of looked up to him. I remember walking in the bathroom, the park bathroom, and over one of the stalls, and there he was in the stall with a needle in his arm. That alone right there said, no, I don't, whatever this is, I don't want it. And what stopped me from using speed and acid, all that stuff, I remember a couple of incidents where a few of my friends came in this restaurant, and they was guys that went to Georgia Tech. They used to make chemicals. And they said, Richard, we got something, let's try this. I tried it, I thought it was cocaine. I did a couple of lines. I think I sat there about 30 minutes, and I got to use the bathroom. That's the last thing I remember for 3 or 4 days. And the other time, I had did some acid, and I was at a Earth, Wind & Fire concert. Poor me, I'm sitting in the front row with my girlfriend, who her name was Billie Jack, gorgeous. And she gave me, she said, put this under your tongue. I put it under my tongue and sit there, and that's nothing happening here. I remember the Pyrex on the front of the stage from Earth, Wind & Fire come out, the smoke come out, the fire come out, and that was the last thing I remember. I remember going under the stage, and when she came and got me, the concert was over with, literally. And that stopped me, that point right there stopped me from using any kind of drug except cocaine. When I learned about cocaine, I was living in Techwood. I had grown up and got to know the ins and outs of Techwood. And to my remembrance, I was the first one to bring that drug to my neighborhood. Back then, before they started freebasing, they was doing Cocoa Puffs, which was taking the cocaine pot and putting in cigarettes. And they were smoking it like that. And I remember sitting in a friend of mine's apartment and just, you know, and like I said, when freebasing came along, I was in Houston, Texas, when I started freebasing. And I did my first freebase maybe one or two times that night, and I didn't touch it again for like a whole year. I was afraid of it. I was afraid of the feel. But then I started seeing all these beautiful women's, you know, the alcohol and the cocaine that was all around. I did the same thing with some of the celebrities too. You know, after I got my way into the industry.
So you're doing cocaine or crack?
I did both of them. I do cocaine now.
Mm-hmm.
Just powder every now and then.
What's the difference between cocaine and crack?
Crack, it's the purest form of cocaine. You take all the cuts out of it. You take all the garbage out of it. That's the purest form of it. And some of the people that makes that stuff put speed in it. So some of it make you speedy. Now, when you're doing cocaine just relaxes you, makes you happy, you know, gives you some energy. But when you're doing crack, it kind of makes you spooky. Not that you're getting something to balance it off. I usually get me some alcohol. Now, I call you to balance minds off. Dead in marijuana.
How much cocaine are you using now?
I probably do probably a couple of grams a week. You know, I usually do the cocaine so I can paint. That's how I get. Lately I've lost a lot of my inspiration on my craft, so I go and get some cocaine and some alcohol, and that kind of get, you know, bring my spirit up. You know, I became the world's most famous artist a few years ago, and during that time, I was homeless on the streets, and some guys, they discovered me, and to this day, I can walk in some of the shopping centers or some of the stores, and people say, there go Richard, and it's kind of crazy, and sad, those same dudes that quote-unquote discovered me robbed me at the same time. So what that did, they sent me back to homelessness, back to alcohol. Almost 7-8 months, man. I didn't even go out of the house. I just drank, bro. Just me, trapped in there by myself. Met a lady who was a professor. Introduced to these lawyers, and they took the case and filed a suit against the guys that they took millions. And I'm doing worse now than I was when that happened. I'm dealing with mental illness now, which is a real thing. And I sit sometime, I just drink and try to just... At first I was afraid to admit that I was dealing with mental illness. Some days I just sleep for 2 or 3 days, 3 or 4 days. I forget what day it is. I could walk out of a store and forget where I'm at. That's how alcohol and drugs have damaged me. Instead of someone reaching out to help me or try to help me, everybody still wanted to sell my image. So I decided for myself that I have to deal with this myself, and I'm dealing with it as best I can. You know. The building I live in now, the apartment building I live in now, is mainly for people dealing with mental illness, depression, which is, I get very depressed. And depression leads you right back to where the liquor store. I still get up in the morning, I keep $2 to walk down to the store every morning to get me a beer. If I don't, I stay in the bed for 2 or 3 days. That's what I'm dealing with now. So, if people don't think mental illness is real, trust and believe me, it's very real. I'm a living witness of that.
What do you think people don't understand about the connection between alcohol or drug addiction and mental illness?
What I think they don't understand about it? That they don't understand it's real. That it's real. A lot of people don't believe that alcohol and drugs can make you, you know, be so depressed you want to kill yourself. They don't believe that. They believe that's some dumb shit. Mental illness is real, bro. It is real. It is very real. And for years, I was afraid to admit that. It wasn't until the last couple of years, man, that I'm... If I had not started to deal with it, I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now.
Do you think the childhood you had played a factor in the mental problem?
Of course it did. Of course it did. That's to me personally, I think that's what starts it anyway. It just get embedded in you and comes out when catastrophic things happen to you or someone misuses your trust or you lose a loved one. The most depressing time of my life, I was in prison in 2011 when my mother passed away and I wasn't able to be at her funeral. And I, you know what I did? I went to the Pruno Man and I bought wine from the Pruno Man.
This is like prison made
yes,
alcohol?
Sir. Yeah, yeah. And when you have a death in your family, they use this, put you in segregation for a few days. And because I wasn't a troublemaker, I was able to stay where I was. But I had all the Pruno that was on the yard in my cell. I didn't come out for probably 7 to 8 days at all. I didn't come out to eat. Nothing. I didn't come out to the yard. I didn't do anything. I was sitting there and drank. That was alcohol is the worst thing you can ever. I can't understand how marijuana can be illegal or was illegal, and alcohol is what it is. I could never understand that. My grandfather almost killed me behind alcohol. That man would come in, and I knew it. You could hear him. And I knew I was going to get a beating. And I got tired of getting beaten. 9 years old, I left. I remember going on this long highway, man. There was no lights. We're talking about the 60s. There was no lights on the highways, none. And I remember hearing a buzzing sound behind me and two little dots in the dark. And it was the sheriff and the truant officer, which he worked both for, the sheriff and the truant officer. And he's out there looking for me. He pulled up beside me and said, "Little boy, get in the car." And his name was Walt Lang. I'll never forget that name. And I told him what had happened. I got tired of my grandfather beating me, and I got tired of him, got tired of watching my grandfather molest my sister. And I literally ran away to go get a gun and come back and kill my grandfather. That's what I did. And he took me to my second grade teacher's house. And she was a drinker. He had one of them nice homes, all the alcohol you want. And she made me a thing on the sofa, and when she cut the lights out, I went to the alcohol thing and started drinking. When she woke up the next morning, I was drunk. And she called my mother. Mr. Watling contacted my mother in Atlanta, which was the first time I saw Miss Jessie. She came and got me and my sister and I. And my sister, she was a drinker, but she didn't raise hell. She would get loud sometimes, but she didn't. My mother, she was a soft. My mother would drink, but you'd never hear Miss Jessie. She was never one of those drunks that cuss everybody out, or, you know, she was a businesswoman. She was a functional drinker, you know.
Do you have children of your own?
Yes, I have. I have 11 kids.
You have 11 kids?
Yes. The youngest one is 8. The oldest one is 43.
You were in love or married before?
I was married 3 times. Hmm. I was married 3 times and a couple of marriages for business purposes. But I got kids by all of them. And they all are friends. Set of twins and set of twin girls. You know, just in the 11.
You say your ex-wives are all friends?
Yes. And the kids are too.
That's great.
I haven't been able to make it home to Atlanta to the last few family reunions because things has been happening to me out here. And as I said, sometimes I would be ready to go and I would be so depressed and I would just get the drink and I would just go back to bed and forget the trip, forget the family reunion.
What brought you out to Los Angeles?
I was part of an organization called the BMF. And I came out here to control the product that was coming out here, and then eventually they all moved out here. Some of them, the main guys moved out here, but I came out here and I was selling cocaine to the celebrities. I was Hollywood Hills. I mean, literally, all the celebrities that's in the industry back in them days that you heard about using drugs. On cocaine, a free basin. I was probably one that was supplying them. Richard Pryor, Gail Fisher, who was the first celebrity I stayed with out here. You know, and I would go to the nightclubs like Speakeasy, the Candy Store, all these private clubs, Liberace, which was a very private club. When you walk in Liberace, which was upstairs in the building on Melrose, there was cocaine and alcohol everywhere. There was no charge, just had to know someone to get in there. I mean, a couple of ladies I met at one of the restaurants invited me to hang out with them that night. Changed my life. And I was very young. I would hang out at places like this, like the, it was on Sunset and Vine, on top of this building. I would go up there, it was a great place. And that was meet most of my customers right there, sitting at the bar. I mean, you knew who did powder. I would supply all those people. I'd go to these orgies, these beach parties, where everything went. The thing that Diddy's involved in. Those the real ones then, but it was none of that crazy shit. Just people coming in, getting butt naked and having fun. That was it. And usually when everybody walked, they're drunk anyway. You know, there's been times I would go to parties and walked out with 2/5 in my hand. For real, drinking out of both of them. But I thought it was cool. And, you know, I remember my brother's wedding. After my brother's wedding, I had got so drunk at the wedding when me and my girlfriend was headed home. I mean, I just puked up all the way home. And that, my brother's been married now, I think, almost 40 years now. So, you know, and it's just been a life for me.
What are you proudest of?
What am I proud of? That I'm able to paint pictures and make the world happy. Hmm. I'm one of them artists, I don't paint for the money. And some of the money that I do earn, I try to help the homeless people with it. But I'm proud that God gave me the ability I have a natural talent to paint. And over 3 billion people worldwide have proved that to me by making comments, you know. And that's my name, you go on Metaverse, my name is for sale on Metaverse, things like that. And you know what is crazy? I could be on the computer and my face would pop up. And I sit there and I look and I cry and I reach for the bottle. Even now. Because I'm still not understanding, you know, what happened. Let me ask you, when you walk down Sunset Boulevard on the most famous part of Sunset Boulevard, the most expensive part of Sunset Boulevard, which is the Sunset Strip. I remember walking out of a restaurant on Sunset, on the strip down there, and I'm just walking, and all of a sudden somebody said, look, and I'm on this billboard, big as this building. Things like that, some of that stuff really sucked me into depression, because when I found out at the end of the day that I was really being used. But I was proud to see myself like that. I'm proud to know the world that know what I am, you know, and the reason I paint, you know. But dealing with my crisis, that's what I'm really dealing with right now. When all this stuff was going on, I was homeless. 6 months later, I'm homeless again. You know, things like that cause depression. Things like that cause mental illness.
You have housing now?
I'm sorry?
You have housing now?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I'm going to step up on Vine, which is a mental health program. And I had not been taking it serious because I'm still like, I'm admitting to the world that I have a mental illness problem. It wasn't until I saw people like Simone Biles, you know, other celebrities or famous people was talking about their mental illness. And I'm saying to myself, if he can talk about it, she can talk about it, why can't I admit that I'm in the same position?
Yeah. Richard, let me ask you one last question. What would you say is the most important lesson you've learned in your life? How old are you?
I'm 67.
What would you say is the most important lesson?
The most important thing in life now? Me, believing in God, believing in the Holy Spirit. I don't know if you do or not, but it took a long time for me to say that. The most important thing in my life now is getting healthy and helping other people. As I said to millions of people around the world, it's not about me anymore. It's about the person I left behind. Even now, I get up and go downtown and I volunteer. You know, but sometimes when I volunteer and I leave that place, I have to go to a liquor store, even now, to deal with that pain and agony. You know, just. I'm still dealing with depression, but I'm not angry as I was anymore. But the most important thing now is living, getting my health back. That's the most important thing. Once I got my health back, then I can deal with the rest. My inspiration to paint, gone. You know, so that's the most important thing right now is getting my health back.
All right. Richard, thank you so much for sharing your story.
No problem, sir.
I wish you lots of luck from here on out.